Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Global Citizen International Digest. I'm Mel Gertov. I'll be reporting and commenting on the most important and sometimes the most neglected international news of the week. Here are today's top stories. The Trump corruption machine goes on. Hamas accepts a deal, or does it? Netanyahu's takeover of the West Bank may mean an end to the two-state solution. First, the Trump corruption machine goes on. The corruption endemic that always comes with the Trump presidency is on in full force these days. There's Trump's Bitcoin operation, Mar-a-Lago hosting of international conferences, and endless influence peddling. There's his special Middle East envoy, Steve Witkoff's son, soliciting real estate investments from the same governments, such as Qatar, that are mediating peace talks. The investment fund is headed by the senior Witkoff, who also is involved in a cryptocurrency venture with Trump. Then there's Tom Homan, the border czar, filmed accepting a bag filled with $50,000 in an FBI sting operation. The money was apparently given to Homan in expectation of government contracts. Homan has escaped prosecution, and no one seems to know where the money is. And there's Jared Kushner, engaged in the biggest buyout in history. The video game maker Electronic Arts is going private in a $55 billion deal that's funded by Saudi Arabia's public investment fund and a Jared Kushner-backed investment firm called Affinity Partners. The deal requires U.S. government review by the Committee on Foreign Investment, but with Kushner involved in Middle East policymaking, is there any question that the deal will be approved? Here's another even bigger corrupt action now underway. Trump's decision to bail out Argentina with a $20 billion loan. At one level, the bailout is a kick in the shins for U.S. soybean growers. They are already suffering from Trump's China policy, which has led the Chinese to boycott U.S. soybeans. Argentina's soybean farmers will replace Americans. So here's Argentina getting a huge loan while American farmers go under. But that's not the corrupt part of the deal. Judd Legum, for Popular Information, writes that the bailout specifically benefits a billionaire hedge fund manager, Rob Citrone, who is a close friend of the U.S. official who announced the Argentina deal, Scott Bessent, the Treasury Secretary. Citrone is heavily invested in Argentina, and in the past has helped make Bessent a billionaire too. So Bessent owes Citrone a big favor. Citrone stands to lose plenty if the right-wing government of Javier Milei goes under due to massive debt, high inflation, and widespread unemployment. The U.S. bailout is an attempt to keep Milei's government in power as midterm elections approach. No wonder Milei is one of Trump's latest favorites. Next, Hamas accepts a deal, or does it? Donald Trump must think the Nobel Peace Prize is within reach following Hamas's acceptance of a plan for ending the Gaza war. Israeli commentators are describing the deal as a huge setback for Benjamin Netanyahu because he had to accept Trump's orders. Under that plan, Hamas, in exchange for the release of Palestinian prisoners, will release all remaining hostages and the remains of others, will disarm, and will accept an Israeli security presence in Gaza that eventually will be internationalized. But will it disarm? Will the Israeli Defense Forces, the IDF, which supposedly is now in a defensive posture, release its grip on Gaza and stop bombing? Trump has demanded that the bombing stop. Will the Palestinian people who have fled be able to return to what's left of their homes? Will the Israeli far right drop its opposition to the plan, since it is saying it will withdraw support of Netanyahu if Hamas continues to exist? In short, much remains to be determined. Netanyahu's takeover of the West Bank may mean an end to the two-state solution. Claire Parker writes for the Washington Post that Netanyahu's government and its settler allies are already laying the groundwork to eventually extend Israeli sovereignty over the West Bank. Within the past year, she says, Israel has, first, approved new Jewish settlements at a record rate, while settlers have established an unprecedented number of informal outposts. Next, they've advanced projects put on hold for decades, including a plan to develop a significant tract of land east of Jerusalem that could thwart Palestinian aspiration for statehood by dividing the West Bank in two. Next, approved a plan to resume land registration in the West Bank, suspended 6 decades ago that could force Palestinians to produce property documents from before Israel's establishment to prove ownership. Next, ordered the extended deployment of the Israeli army for the first time into Palestinian refugee camps. And finally, lent support to radical settlers whose rapidly escalating attacks on Palestinians and their property are designed, residents and human rights activists say, to drive Palestinians off their land. Taken together, these developments ensure that a separate Palestinian state will be impossible to create, just as Netanyahu said as recently as mid-December, quote, "A Palestinian state will not be established. This place is ours. We will also take care of our heritage, our country, and our security," unquote. In other news, Trump's latest transactions with China. Donald Trump has been hankering for an invitation to visit China since day one of his second term. Tariffs and the future of TikTok have stood in the way, but now he says China has reached an agreement on TikTok. Oracle, the multinational technology corporation headquartered in Texas and controlled by Larry Ellison, Trump's billionaire buddy, will oversee Americans' data and monitor TikTok under the deal. That arrangement is expected to pave the way for Trump to meet Chinese President Xi Jinping at a regional summit of the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Group at the end of October in South Korea. APEC is a 21-member group mainly concerned with trade relations. Trump said he would visit China in the early part of next year. Trump may be prepared to sacrifice Taiwan in order to create further incentives for China to strike a trade deal. News reports indicate that he has held back a $400 million weapons deal with Taiwan. Is it a negotiating tactic with China, or might Trump be applying new pressure on Taiwan to increase its own defense spending? Taiwan has already committed to a major boost in military spending and to buying U.S. arms rather than relying on U.S. military aid. China hawks in Washington are reportedly nervous about China's ability to obtain chip-making tools despite U.S. government restrictions. Reuters reports that, quote, "gaps in efforts by the U.S. and allies to restrict China's ability to manufacture advanced computing chips have allowed China to buy nearly $40 billion of sophisticated chip-making gear, according to a bipartisan investigation by U.S. lawmakers," unquote. The Trump administration is being blamed for not closing those gaps out of the president's desire for a big trade deal with the People's Republic of China. Next, the U.S. ambassador to Canada has regrets. America's ambassador to Canada, Peter Hoekstra, said during a luncheon in Halifax, quote, "I'm disappointed that I came to Canada, a Canada where it is very, very difficult to find Canadians who are passionate about the American-Canadian relationship." Hoekstra, who previously was the Republican Party chair in Michigan, host to election deniers, said he had hoped to make progress on energy, defense, and other issues. But the Canadians' reaction to Trump's tariffs, elbows up, a hockey term for alert defense, and Trump's desire to make Canada a U.S. state have prevented such cooperation, something Hoekstra neglected to mention. Although tariffs on some Canadian goods have been dropped by Trump, the average tariff rate stands at a very high 35%, including on autos, steel, and aluminum. So it's the Canadians who are the most disappointed. "Canada will agree to a deal that's in the best interest of Canadians," said Prime Minister Mark Carney. It should not surprise anyone, including the U.S. ambassador. When it comes to the United Nations, the U.S. is a deadbeat. Overlooked when Donald Trump addressed the U.N. General Assembly on September 23rd is that his administration has failed to pay its U.N. bills. Besides some money owed from 2024, according to the United Nations, Washington owes more than $3 billion. The figure includes $826 million owed as part of the 2025 regular budget assessment, which for the U.S. is 22%, and the rest in arrears for past years or unpaid peacekeeping operation commitments. A few weeks ago, Trump's team announced it wouldn't pay some $393 million in State Department contributions to peacekeeping activities and $445 million in separately budgeted peacekeeping aid. Trump has already stopped supporting various UN agencies, such as the Human Rights Council and UNESCO. Someone might remind Trump that under the United Nations Charter, the U.S. could lose its vote in the General Assembly if it doesn't pay up. That would put it alongside a few other countries, including Venezuela. Next, Trump puts a price on H-1B visas. In a move intended to create more work opportunities for Americans, but more likely to create problems for high-tech U.S. corporations, universities, and others, President Trump announced a $100,000 fee for new visas for skilled foreign workers. Corporations that rely heavily on such workers, such as Amazon and Walmart, worry that the regulation will discourage their employment and reduce their competitiveness. I think this is going to mean that we're fighting the artificial intelligence war against China with one hand tied behind our back, said the head of a tech industry coalition. There's a limited number of top talent in AI, and some of that is foreign-born. Trump seeks a new head for the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. Donald Trump only wants department heads who report good news. He fired the head of the BLS, Erica McIntyre, in July for reporting bad news on unemployment. She said, quote, "Markets have to trust the data that are not manipulated. Firing your chief statisticians for releasing data you do not like, it has serious economic consequences." She notes the international impact of putting a Trump loyalist in her place. Several countries have gone down a similar route, including Argentina, Greece, and Turkey, and that's not a good list, she said. The resulting loss of trust in economic statistics led these countries to worsening economic crises, higher inflation, and higher borrowing costs, she said. She also said the Bureau is facing an uncertain moment and that Americans should broadly be concerned about the future of key economic institutions, including the Federal Reserve, which has also been under heavy attack from the White House. Trump nominated E.J. Antoni, chief economist at the conservative think tank The Heritage Foundation and a co-author of Project 2025, to replace McIntyre. He is a vocal critic of the Bureau of Labor Statistics. But then Trump pulled the nomination after Antoni's many scurrilous social media postings were revealed. A White House spokesperson would not address those postings, instead citing Antoni's patriotism and great work as an economist. And while the world waits on the next nominee, the administration has used the excuse of the government shutdown to stop issuing labor statistics. Vladimir Putin orders new conscriptions for his war. The Russian president has ordered the conscription of 135,000 men by the end of 2025, the largest conscription drive in 9 years. In the 3 years since Russia began its full-scale invasion of Ukraine in 2022, it has drafted an average of 127,000 men every fall. What this new conscription tells me is that, far from considering how to end the war, Putin is determined to sacrifice any number of lives to win it. Why Navalny died, new evidence. We always knew that Russia's leading dissident, Alexei Navalny, had died at the hands of Putin's regime. Now we have clear proof that he was poisoned in an Arctic region penal colony, where he had been sentenced. The Washington Post reports that, quote, two laboratories tested samples from Navalny that had been smuggled out of the country, and they had concluded he had been poisoned. His wife said this in a video statement. She had been unable to obtain their final reports, detailing what kind of poison had been used, and called on them to release their findings. Now we know. Finally, a feel-good story. A USAID lifeboat crew saves lives. This from The Guardian. After losing their jobs abruptly when the Trump administration slashed U.S. overseas aid earlier this year, a group of dedicated workers at the U.S. Agency for International Development decided to launch their own rescue package. Refusing to wallow in misery, Rob Rosenbaum, a former USAID economist, and a group of like-minded former agency staff began efforts to save some of the vital programs that faced closure after the cuts. Now, almost 80 projects have been saved by a fund-matching service run by Rosenbaum and former USAID staff. With $110 million in new funding, the team estimates it will benefit 40 million people, including many children under five. And that's the Global Citizen International Digest for the week. I'm Mel Gertov. Thanks for listening, and take good care.